Liberty Shirt Company is the perfect holiday season gift because of the awesome flannels and casual shirts that we love to wear around no matter the season. But they are not just shirts that college-age guys like us love to wear. They make shirts that your dad, uncle, and granddad will love too. Every shirt is custom, so it's fit to your liking. And what's not to love about a clothing company that actually makes their shirts in America instead of China like most brands? So if you're in the giving spirit, head over to libertyshirtco.com right now. And if you use the promo code 3PEAT at checkout, you're going to save 10% on your order. And if you buy two shirts, you will get a free pair of suspenders. That's libertyshirtco.com and the promo code is 3PEAT.
Welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast. This is episode 9 of season 2. I'm your host this week, Alex Castle, and I am joined by
Josh Romowitz
and Steven Benazzo.
We got another great show lined up for you this week. We're going to be talking World Series, Blake Snell getting taken out a little too early. We're going to talk about Justin Turner being confirmed positive for COVID-19 and how he reacted to that. And we're going to talk about the NFL, a lot to talk about the NFL. But first, let's get into the World Series. As we all know, the Los Angeles Dodgers are your champions this year, winning for the first time since 1998, I believe. The city of LA has now two champions with the Dodgers and the Lakers. So congrats to the city. Guys, Blake Snell, he got taken out after 73 pitches. I'm not a Tampa fan, obviously, because they knocked out our Yankees. But why do you think this happened, and did it cost them the World Series?
Absolutely.
I agree.
Blake Snell is a former Cy Young. I don't think anyone understood the move, except, I guess, Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays. But you saw the Dodger players who were being interviewed after the game. They're like, wow, this was our best-case scenario. We got their ace out, even though he was balling. And then you saw, as soon as he got taken out, the reliever came in, put runners on, Mookie did his thing, and the rest was history. I mean, you could also blame the Tampa Bay Bats for not giving enough run support to the bullpen. But yeah, the move of taking out Blake Snell really confused me.
So now you look at the ALCS, when did the Yankees get eliminated? ALDS, I'm off track.
ALCS.
ALCS, that's right, the ALCS. So, and you saw there Aaron Boone was just trying to do anything, was trying all these different things, and none of them really seemed to work out. And you saw Kevin Cash had trust in his players and was playing it smart, and then they ended up winning. Now, into the World Series, he completely just did the opposite of what he was doing during the ALCS. He looked like Aaron Boone during the World Series, pulling Blake Snell that early. Like, he just did not seem comfortable with running this team during the World Series. I don't know why. And that was a big game, and they had the lead. They were riding behind Blake Snell. Obviously, it didn't help that the offense couldn't put up any runs. They needed any more run support. I mean, one run is just not enough, especially against the Dodgers lineup, because you saw what happened. Immediately when he got taken out, the Dodgers put up two runs, and then there you go. Game's over. Dodgers are World Series champs. So if you're Kevin Cash, I mean, this is going to haunt you for pretty much the rest of your life. And you got to feel for Snell, because he knew that he had that game under control. He was feeling it. He was dealing. He had 9 strikeouts through, what, like 5 innings?
Basically.
And, I mean, they couldn't – look at Bellinger. Bellinger – that one strikeout Bellinger had, he completely just whiffed. The pitch was outside. He just did not, like, seem comfortable going against Blake Snell. So, if you're the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, you got to be thrilled where they made it, because I didn't see them as World Series contenders. I saw them as, you know, playoff contenders, but I didn't see them going all the way to the World Series. But then you also got to be a little disappointed, because they were making that series a bit interesting with LA. And that game was theirs for the taking, and they just – it's not even like the players blew it. I think Kevin Cash kind of blew it. Listen, if you kept Snell in and he allowed a run, whatever. At least you were – you let the guy who was feeling it continue to control the game. I just – you got to let him stay in. It's a tough call. Not everyone can make it. It's not easy being a manager, but I think you should have left him in.
I agree, and – I think now the question is raised is, what is Tampa going to do going forward looking at Kevin Cash? I mean, you know, if I'm higher up in the organization, am I saying to myself, you know, do I get rid of Kevin Cash because he took out one of the top pitchers in game six? Or, like you said, Steve, it was a tough call, so maybe we cut him some slack. Personally, I look at the run that Tampa had throughout the playoffs, and I say, no, I don't think you bash Kevin that quickly. But it's definitely something to look at going forward.
Yeah, I think you can't let him go. I mean, he did help lead this team to the World Series. Also, to Tampa Bay, they don't like to spend a lot of money on their staff, front office, especially their roster. They like to keep things – they like to get – you know, a solid core group, but not pay them a lot of money. They like to get these like everyday guys who can make an impact, but may not be these super. They might be superstars up and coming, like Glasnow, Blake Snell, but they don't like to just go out and sign the big name guys. So I feel like the same with managers. You know, they have a guy who's really good in Kevin Cash. I mean, he look how good he did this season. Even last season, he helped bring them kind of back to, like, you got to respect the Tampa Bay Rays. Then this season, heck of a year they had, led them deep into the postseason, led them to a World Series appearance. So, you know, I think they got their guy. He just has to now, after another year being passed, has to look at, all right, what, you know, look at all the pros, look at all the good things that I've helped this team do. All right, what are some of the mistakes or things I've done that maybe I should have chosen to do differently? So he's got to really, you know, analyze himself, really be honest about himself. But I think you got to keep him because I think he's one of the better GMs in this, or not GMs, managers in this league.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying about keeping him, but I do think he deserves a lot of the blame for this World Series, because at the end of the day, the managerial decision is what cost them the World Series ultimately.
Yes, but going forward, though, I mean, now he has experience managing a team in the World Series. And look at Aaron Boone has never managed a team past the ALCS. You know? And it's tough to find a managers out there who are not going to want super big money, who have managed a team in the World Series. So that's what I'm saying. Yes, he's to blame, but you can't just get rid of him. I mean, you got to think he's pretty young. He's younger. He's under contract with them. And he now has that much more experience. Like, I just feel that he's just too, like, he has too much worth now for them to just get rid of because he might have led them, his decision led them to losing a title, which I think they were going to lose regardless. I thought LA was just too much, too strong of a team to let the Rays beat them. So
I called it on the pod, on the Instagram. I said Dodgers in six.
He did, and I don't like to give Fromwitz too much credit with a lot of things, but this I do have to give. He did call the Dodgers winning in game six, but what he didn't predict and what none of us could have predicted is what happened with the Dodgers and with Justin Turner. It was, I believe, the eighth inning when the organization found out that Justin Turner had tested positive for COVID-19. They had put him in the dugout, and they had isolated him. But then, when it came time to celebrate their first World Series since 1988, I'd like to clarify. Apologies, not 98, 88. Turner was out there. He was celebrating with his team. He kissed his wife on the lips. He had his mask off. He was sitting next to his manager without his mask, who is a cancer survivor, who's put more at risk than a lot of people. Now, if I'm Justin Turner and my team just won the World Series, I would want to do whatever I can to keep myself isolated. Now I want to hear what you guys think. If, you know, he had the right to celebrate, he didn't. But I think it was just handled poorly on all accounts. I mean, you know, you have to look at it in the sense that the NBA has been handled it the best. No cases at the end of the season. The bubble was great. So if I'm the MLB, I'm going to want to at least try to do everything, especially in the championship game when it's heavily televised. I mean, baseball, even though at times it doesn't really, you know, people don't put it in the same category in terms of views and ratings as basketball and football, the World Series is still huge. So I want to hear what you guys think about, you know, do you think Turner was completely in the wrong? Do you think his celebration was justified? And finally, you know, was the MLB and the Dodgers response appropriate?
Listen, part of me kind of feels for him because he was on the Dodgers roster all those years when they made it to the World Series, 2017, 2018. Loss, especially loss in the way they did to the Astros and the Red Sox. But, and I get, you know, he's probably just super excited because now he finally won the World Series. His teammates won it. Like, it's a big deal. I get it. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment that not too many people get to witness and experience and be part of. That being said, though, listen, if he had COVID-19 and didn't know he had it and didn't come out till after the game that he had it and celebrated, whatever, he's not at fault. But because he got pulled during the middle, or what was it, ninth inning he got pulled, right?
I believe it was the eighth inning.
Eighth inning?
I believe.
So he still got pulled, you know, late in the game. But they said, like, you tested positive. So then he went, okay. But then to come back and celebrate and take pictures and sometimes not even having his mask on with COVID. Now, his teammates were like, well, we've been with each other. We've been, you know, for all this time now, like basically any of us could have it. Any of us could have, you know, gotten it kind of deal. But listen, this dude actually has it. Like, you can't just be risking everyone just because you won the World Series. Like, COVID-19 is a lot of a bigger deal right now than the World Series. I hate to say it, but it's just, you know, COVID's a bigger situation that we're trying to deal with right now. And we're fortunate enough to have sports, you know, have the NHL season finish, have the NBA season finish, have the MLB season start, even though it was shortened, have the playoffs played, have, you know, the World Series played. But we had all this because they had to follow different rules and protocols in order to let it be done. And I just thought that the MLB should be under scrutiny, especially the Dodgers, especially Justin Turner, for allowing him to come back onto the field, celebrate, and basically be right up close to everyone while it was known he tested positive for COVID. I just think it's ridiculous.
I think MLB handled this very poorly, like you said, Steve. And I feel where Justin Turner is coming from. And I think, yes, he's definitely at fault, but he is definitely not the only person who is faulted for this because he was around all his teammates, like you said. So if he had it, like, and then he came back out to celebrate with his teammates, I don't see that to be as big of a deal because they might have been exposed because they were around him. He played in the game. The Rays players were around him also. They could have been exposed. But to not wear a mask around the fans and the kids and everyone who was on the field, that's where I think, and having his mask off, that I think is the big issue with the whole thing. If you wanted to be on the field, great. Distance yourself, wear a mask. But yeah.
I look at it like this. You know, I'm at school right now and we all have to wear our masks once we leave our, you know, residential building. So imagine if someone tests positive for COVID and they're told, you know, they go for a test and they're like, you tested positive, you have to quarantine in one of the designated quarantine areas. And they do. And they go there and then say, you know, maybe even not later that day, just during one of the days that they still have it and are supposed to be quarantining, they just come out on campus and start just, you know, walking around campus, going to this building, going to that building while they have COVID, you know? I just kind of look at it like that. Like, yes, we're all like, I'm on campus with thousands of other students and faculty, you know, and we all wear a mask, we all follow the rules, we all get tested. But if someone has it, I don't want them around campus, you know, because I don't want them transmitting it. I don't want to catch it. And I just feel like, yes, I knew when I said, yeah, I'm going back to school, like that I have a good chance of catching it because, you know, there could be an outbreak on campus and we're all like kind of not on top of each other, but there's a lot of people is in just a little place like this. So, you know, it's not the greatest comparison, but I feel like kind of that's the thing. Like, if you have it, you're supposed to just follow the rules. No one wants to do it, but it's just for everyone's health and safety. And I just, that's why I get a little frustrated. I just feel like, yes, he was around his teammates this whole time, but I mean, now he actually had it. It's not like it was like, well, he could have it. Like, it was confirmed he had it. And for him to just go around, and like you said, was it Dave Roberts who had cancer? Or
yeah.
I mean, that's just like, come on. Like, really? Like, you know, people with prior health conditions or health conditions currently are hugely at risk. So I don't know. Yeah, Farmers, you got a point?
I mean, finish and then I'll go after you.
No, I'm kind of at a loss at words. I just feel like he could have been. And it's not like this hurt my image of him because it didn't, but I just thought he could have handled it a lot better and could have been way smarter about it.
Yeah. I mean, what I still don't understand is how originally it was he tested and the MLB result, the results came back and it was neither. Like, they didn't know what it was. And then they tested it again, and then they saw it was confirmed. So I don't get how that happens mid-game. Like, that's one of the big issues that I am struggling to understand with this whole thing.
Well, it's been an issue not even in the MLB, but just like, especially the football, you know, college and the NFL. It's just like the testing is because sometimes look at all the false positives. But then now there's a lot more confirmed positives. So it's difficult, but that's where you got to play it safe so you're not spreading it and making sure everyone's safe and healthy, right, Castle?
Absolutely. I think it raises the question going forward of what these sports organizations need to do with testing. You know, if there's a player that's more at risk, do you bench them for the beginning of the game? Do you not play them at all? That's something that we'll have to see going forward. Like you said, the NFL is one of those organizations that's been struggling with testing. But what they haven't been struggling with is the games. I mean, we've had some great games this week. One of the biggest teams that I've been impressed with is Pittsburgh. I mean, the only undefeated team left in the league, Big Ben is still their quarterback after all these years, looking like prime Big Ben. He's got a slew of young wide receivers around him. And the defense, that's the biggest thing for me is the defense.
Is the steel curtain back?
Say that again?
Is the steel curtain back in Pittsburgh?
Is the steel curtain back in Pittsburgh? I don't know. I think that their defense has been showing up a lot of these teams, but I think they're really going to be tested against this Baltimore game. I think that Mike Tomlin is very familiar, obviously, with the Ravens. I'm a big fan of Tomlin. He's a well-respected coach in the league. But this is their biggest test. Can this defense, and I'm really curious to see what you guys think, can this defense handle Baltimore?
Yes. I think, first off, it seems like a bunch of other teams have figured out Baltimore's game, whether it's the option with Lamar or with Mark Ingram or J.K. Dobbins or play-action passes to Marquise Brown or Mark Andrews. It seems like other teams have figured out their solution, their offense. But I think the pass rush of T.J. Watt, Stephon Tuitt, Cameron Hayward, or the secondary led by Minkah Fitzpatrick, Joe Hayden, it's just nasty. This team is the best defense in the league, and it's not even close.
Listen, they are definitely a contender. And it's funny because a lot of people seem to rope Big Ben off, especially once AB left, Le'Veon left. And then he got injured and was like, you know what? Big Ben's just not – he doesn't have the same impact he once did. But then you saw last year, their defense kept them in games, but their offense was – it couldn't really get going because their quarterback situation was just a mess. Mason Rudolph at first didn't look too bad, but then he just did awful. And then the whole thing with the Browns and Myles Garrett, that was – what a night that was. But then they had Devlin Hodges, Duck Hodges. He was just not good. And now look at Big Ben. I mean, Big Ben may not be putting up the monster numbers he used to, but I mean, he's still putting up some pretty good stats. He's got like 13 touchdowns.
Showing flashes of the Big Ben that we've all known.
He's just putting the ball where it has to be. And then he's got playmakers like Juju. I mean, I think Juju could step it up, but he's got Chase Claypool's really starting to emerge. I mean, that was a great draft pick for them. You know, Ebron, pretty solid tight end option. The running backs with James Conner, Jalen Samuels. Listen, like, they don't have the weapons they used to, but they're making it work. And that's because I believe that Big Ben is back at QB. So, and then their defense, like Farhan said, I think their secondary needs to play a little bit better. But that D-line and those linebackers, I mean, Devin Bush getting hurt and being out for the year does not help. But that D-line and pass rush that they have is just unreal. It's definitely, you know.
Do you think this defense is motivated because of what's happened in the past with Ryan Shazier and what he has meant to this team multiple years after that injury?
It's a great question.
Listen, I think they're just motivated regardless. I think they just want to be the best version of themselves that they know they can be. But Shazier definitely has a big role in that, you know? Now, listen, when he first got hurt, yeah, they were definitely motivated by him. Now, after it's been a few years and stuff like that, not that they're not motivated by him, but I don't think that particular instance or that situation now has, like, that's what they're playing for. I don't think it's that. I think last year, not going the way they wanted to. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, when you think of them, you think of one of the best franchises in the NFL. I mean, you go all the way back to the 70s with Terry Bradshaw and the Steel Curtain. And then the early to mid-2000s when Big Ben won his Super Bowls against Seattle, against Arizona. Then they made it a few years later, lost to Green Bay. But still, like, you had – and that those defenses, Polamalu, James Harrison, you know, like – so this team, like, again, it's kind of like the Bears. They've just been known for having these tough defenses, which will just – punch you in the mouth game in and game out. So when they're not competitive, and not that they weren't competitive last year, but they knew they could be a lot better. And that's why I think this year they're just playing so well because they have no drama in the locker room when, like, when AB and Le'Veon were there. Big Ben is back. Like, they got a lot going for them, and they're just taking advantage of it.
I agree. There's definitely more of a sense of unity and camaraderie with this team as a whole. And that's big because, you know, like we mentioned, they've got great players on both sides of the ball, but they're not a flashy team like Tampa where they're just loaded with superstars. And that's what I think makes a great team is when you could take what you have and you really make it work. I mean, this team could easily have had 1-2 losses, but they've been week in and week out, and that's why they're remaining undefeated.
And I have just two quick points to add on. And you got to give credit to Mike Tomlin. I don't think he gets enough credit that he deserves. Listen, even last year when they had a lot of different, you know, trying to replace guys like AB and Le'Veon, and then trying to replace Big Ben all year, it was tough, and they still finished. What did they finish, like 8-8, 7-9? I mean, they were still pretty competitive into the AFC playoffs. And now this year, look at them, 6-0. They're the only undefeated team in the league right now. They're the best team in the league. So you got to give them credit. And then, but I think this week will definitely be their first, not first, but it will be a big test for them. And I know, like we said, Baltimore teams are definitely finding out, you know, how they play, and they kind of understand now. But Baltimore's still tough to play against. They're not just some easy pushover now just because you kind of figured out, well, this is how they use Lamar, blah, blah, blah. You know, Josh, you had a point?
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to that. They played the Titans last week, who are also undefeated. They held Derrick Henry to under 75 yards. That's impressive. That's tough to do. He's a big man.
Yeah, that's no easy task. Especially the week before when he ran for over 200 yards against, what, Houston?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Is it a primetime game? I don't think so, right?
I think it's a 1 o'clock game.
It's a 1 o'clock game, but it's arguably the game of the week.
It's got to be. I mean, listen, Monday night will be kind of cool, but I think this should have been Sunday night game, at least.
I agree.
In division rival, this is gonna be a big game for the division.
It will be.
So
I can't believe you said the Monday night game is gonna be an interesting game.
Listen, I know it's the Giants, but no offense, Castle, but
none taken. You want to talk about why the Giants are on the Monday night game against Tampa? It's beyond me. It's okay.
The Jets have Monday night the week after.
Oh, that's even worse.
Jets Patriots.
Speaking of,
oh, that's teams, awful.
Oh my, yeah, the Jets are getting screwed over. I don't know why these New York teams just bad luck in New York. That's all I could say about that. But speaking of favorite teams, I'm sorry, Steve, but we got to talk about the Bears. We have to talk about Chicago.
I might mute myself.
You guys were going into last week's game. It was already going to be a tough defense with the Rams. I mean, Aaron Donald is just unstoppable. But I had hope for you guys. You know, you guys are still second in your division. You guys signed Foles, which was, I thought, was a great move for you guys. But Foles last week, I mean, no touchdowns. He had two interceptions. He did throw for over 250 yards, which is great, but the miscommunication with Nagy in the fourth, I feel like really messed them up. I want to hear what you guys think about this. Steve, it's all you first.
All right. Thank you, Hassel. Listen, two things. One, number one, main one, Nagy has to give up play calling. He has to. I'm tired of saying, you know what? I don't think it's Nagy. It's a personnel. You know, first, I think it was Mitch. All right, now you're a few games on the belt with Nick Foles. And to be honest, it seems like the offense is almost playing worse with Foles. And I don't think it's Foles. So it's like, all right, maybe it's not the QB. Okay, here's my second point, which plays a big part of it. But again, it's not completely the fault. The O-line is just awful. It sucks. They did well the first game against Detroit. But now James Daniels, who was arguably our best lineman, went down with a torn pec, so he's done. Cody Whitehair got hurt during the middle of that game, but even he's allowing a lot of pressures. Our tackles just look awful. Rashad Coward, the backup replacement for James Daniels, is just so bad. You gotta, I mean, you need a decent O-line to just do anything on offense. So then you pair a poorly playing offensive line with bad play calling, and what is that going to result in? Failure. It's not going to result in anything. It's going to result in what you saw Monday night with the Bears not able to score a touchdown.
What I saw in that Monday night game is their offense was able to move the ball, okay? They drove down the field, but I saw terrible play calling, especially in the red zone. I'm talking about that Foles interception in where he threw the ball into the end zone and it was picked off. I don't know what Nagy was thinking, but that play should not have been called. And I'm sure you, as a Bears fan, who are very frustrated with the play calling, especially a crucial red zone interception.
And listen, yes, exactly. And here's a point I keep seeing, especially Bears like reporters and stuff. They're saying there's no problem with, and I might have said this on a previous podcast episode, there's no problem with Matt Nagy, the head coach. All the problems are with Matt Nagy, the play caller. He's got to just give up his ego of being this offensive-minded guy, which, listen, he is an offensive-minded guy. He's got to give up his ego that he's some sick offensive play caller because, as you can tell, this is year three, and nothing has changed. If anything's gotten worse. I feel like we're scoring more points with just handing Jordan Howard the ball under John Fox and partly Adam Gase and then Dowell Logans, whatever his name is, than with Matt Nagy. I'm just saying. Yeah.
I can't believe you brought his name up.
Well, listen. He's awful right now with the Jets, but and he was awful with the Bears, but I'm saying that's how bad this offense is under Matt Nagy.
No, that's interesting that you brought him up, though, Adam Gase, because one big thing was he was calling plays for the Jets, and against Buffalo for the first half, he gave up play calling. Our offensive coordinator called plays, and we were able to move the ball. But yeah. Adam Gase's ego took over, and he was calling plays in the second half, and we only had 4 total yards of offense in the second half, and that's what ultimately lost us the game. So I thought that was very interesting that you brought Adam Gase up.
Listen, it's just the truth. And I don't remember – I can't remember if – does Sean McVay still call his own plays or did he give that responsibility to his offensive coordinator?
Say that again.
Does Sean McVay still call his offensive plays or did he allow
– Yes, he does.
Okay. But he's not stupid with it. He just – as the game goes on, Matt Nagy just seems to call the same thing. And every time David Montgomery runs a ball, it's just always up the middle. The line sucks. Can you maybe do like a stretch to the outside? Right?
Yep. And you guys mentioned Sean McVay. I am a huge fan of McVay. I think he's a great young coach in this league. Actually, it's funny. I saw a video on Instagram where he was able to name the entire 2018 Bears defense in a press conference.
I saw that too.
So just something interesting to see. But overall, you know, Chicago, listen, they're still second in the division. 5-2 is not a bad record. They are going up against the Saints this week, but they are at home. I honestly think Chicago has a chance in this game. I do. But they need their defense to be all locked in because Michael Thomas will most likely not be playing this Sunday. As of yesterday, he was Sean Payton said that he was sitting out for practice. I like Chicago's secondary. I'm a huge fan of Eddie Jackson, so we definitely got to see about that. But moving on to talk about my favorite division, they really should change the name from the NFC East to the NFC Least because they're the least entertaining division in the NFL. My Giants sit at the bottom. They have no chance.
Don't say that. They're in the NFC East. They have a chance. They're only two games back out of first.
No, they don't. The Giants will do not have a chance, and I'll tell you why. It's because of Daniel Jones. I am a huge fan of the defense this year. Huge fan of the defense. Sure, we have much more to go, but I've seen flashes of potential in this defense. The offense, I don't blame Jason Garrett. I've some of his play calling has been good. I will give that to him. But the biggest thing, one of the biggest issues is Evan Engram. They got to get rid of him. Him missing that catch in the Philly game last week really killed us. Daniel Jones set him up with a nice pass. Have I started to give up on Daniel Jones? Yes. Am I giving up on him completely? No, because I do want to see how he rides out the season. But my question to you guys is, who's going to win the division? I got my pick. I'll go last. Josh, do you see any direction with this division on who's going to make the playoffs?
I mean, does a team from the NFC East have to make the playoffs? I guess my answer would be Philly right now, because I know we always like to bash on Philly and always use our sit-ums with Philly teams, but it just seems like the grit of Carson Wentz, he gets knocked down and keeps getting up. They have so many injuries to that team, but still find a way to be in every ball game. They competed and almost forced overtime against the Ravens. They were trailing against the Giants and fought back. And yes, that Evan Engram drop really helped, but they fought their way and Boston Scott found the end zone to win the game. Sorry, Castle. But I don't know. I think this Philly team, when they are healthy, with all their guys coming back, Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz, Jalen Reagor, do I need to continue with that? They are a decently put together team by a well-coached Doug Peterson.
You know what? I mean, listen, Philly will probably end up winning the division. I'm kind of running with Washington right now. They've been playing pretty well. I mean, they just smoked the Cowboys. And I just feel like, I mean, McLaurin is pretty solid at receiver. They got some pretty good running back options. Antonio Gibson's like playing pretty well. Their quarterback, Kyle Allen's not the greatest, but he's with Alex Smith, and Alex Smith's, you know, really supportive, a great veteran to learn under. And Ron Rivera, he's just a great coach, and especially what he's been going through with his chemo treatments. I mean, those guys are rallying around him, and they're playing for him. And, you know, I know they lost Landon Collins to injury, but Chase Young's been a force on that D-line for them. I don't know. I just feel like they are playing a lot better than people are giving them credit for. Josh, you got a point?
Yeah. Little trivia. Who did Alex Smith mentor that's now a star in the NFL?
I don't know. Was it Patrick Mahomes, maybe?
Yeah, that's a great mind. Alex Smith and Pat Mahomes in that quarterback room. Who knows? Maybe you give Dwayne Haskins a shot again after talking to Kyle Allen and Alex Smith. Who knows? But I really like that pick, Steve.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, Castle, I'm sorry. I just don't think the Giants are
– Or the Cowboys.
Listen.
Or the Cowboys, yeah.
I completely agree. I don't think it's going to be Dallas or New York. I have to go with Philly for my pick. I think Carson Wentz is still showing flashes of his potential. I mean, that game winning touchdown, that was a beautifully set up pass. So I think you gotta watch out for Philly. I do. And I'll get more into that with my picks for this week for our favorite segment for all you fantasy owners. Start 'em, sit 'em. We tell you who to start. We tell you who to sit. And you hope we take our advice for that win. We're going to start off this week with Mr. Josh Fromwitz. Josh, who do you want? Who are you telling fans to start this week? And who are you telling fans to sit?
Okay, so first I mentioned Philly. I want to start someone from Philly. I know that's very rare on the show. But they're playing the Cowboys. which is why I'm going with Travis Fulgham. Steve, we talked about him a few weeks ago, and you said, yeah, let's give him a shot. Let's wait. Keep him on the bench.
Yeah.
And I think if anyone listened to Steve with that, you probably lost your game that week.
Yeah. Maybe.
He's been balling. Like, they're playing the Cowboys, who are 27th in the league in pass defense. They allow the most points a game with 34. Fulgham has emerged as the top target to Carson Wentz after all their injuries. They have three receivers down: Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, Jalen Reagor. Their two tight ends, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz. A couple weeks ago, we spoke about if he was worth starting. Steve said wait. And what has he done? No game under 12 points this year. Against the weak Dallas Cowboys defense, he will get his targets. And the other stardom is very interesting and a little risky, but I think it'll pay off. It's Rashard Higgins, Cleveland Browns wide receiver. As we all know, OBJ is done for this season. Tore his ACL. Hope for speedy recovery, Odell. Jarvis is now the wide receiver number one for Baker Mayfield. Higgins moves into the two spot. But when Odell went down, Higgins stepped up. Six catches, 110 yards. I think he'll get his targets, especially against the Raiders, who are just one spot above the Cowboys in pass defense and allow 33 points. That defense isn't that good. I think Rashard Higgins will get his targets.
Interesting picks.
I like them. And who are you telling people to sit this week?
First one. We're going Devontae Parker, Miami. I like him a lot, and he's helped a lot of people in fantasy for sure. But it's Tua time, and there's no easy game for Tua this week. He's playing the Rams, and Steve, you know, first-handed, unfortunately, how good that defense is, because we saw against the Bears. Aaron Donald is no joke.
Nope, not at all.
So Jalen Ramsey is going to be the cornerback guarding Devontae Parker, and he's nasty. He's probably a top two corner in the league. The Rams' pass defense is sixth in the league. They put pressure on the quarterback, and they'll give up easy yards. Jalen Ramsey, of course, had a pick last week against Nick Foles. I think with the pressure that Aaron Donald and the linebackers and the D-backs are going to be putting on Tua, and the constant pressure of Jalen Ramsey putting on Devontae Parker, you might as well just sit him, because Tua is going to struggle. And the second will be DeAndre Swift. And I like him, because he's a good running back for the Lions, but he faces the Colts this week. The Colts are top three defense, especially in the run. They allow less than 80 yards a game. They're tough to run against. Don't allow many points. Tough to find holes, especially this running back, DeAndre Swift. He doesn't rush for many yards, but he scores, and that's what gets him fantasy points. So it's going to be tough for him to score against the Colts defense.
I like that. I do. And especially with the biggest thing you said, doesn't get a whole lot of rushing yards. I mean, you look at last game and Stafford was throwing the ball a whole lot. So I like your picks, Josh. I also like your Higgins pick to start him, because I don't like giving Baker Mayfield a whole lot of credit, but I think he might have gotten a little spark in him after that win last game. And you know that they're going to be putting more pressure on Landry. So I like both of them. Steve, you're up next. Who you starting this week? Who you sitting this week?
Well, before I get my picks, I just want to boast a little bit from last week, because last week I was spot on with.
Oh, so was I.
Yeah, but you give yourself credit in the past. So I've been a little off with my picks. So last week I actually nailed all of them. I mean, Josh Jacobs did nothing. So call it. AJ Brown went off. T. Higgins did solid, did like 16 points. And then Cooper Kupp had like 8 points. Not that good. So listen.
How about Christian Kirk having 2 touchdowns and I started him? Or me benching Cam Newton and he actually got benched in real life?
Hey, listen. So it was a good week for us. So maybe let's see how our picks do this week. Yeah. So my first stardom.
Streak.
Listen, my first stardom, I got Brandon Ayuk. And listen, I like this kid. I liked him coming out of Arizona State, and I think he went to the perfect team in the 49ers. he's got a good matchup this week going against Seattle D, and we all know Seattle's defense, especially their secondary. They did strengthen their pass rush by acquiring Carlos Dunlap yesterday. Which was Wednesday. So listen, their secondary still kind of needs help. I don't think Jamal Adams will be back for this week. I don't know. I don't know what their plans are with him. Their secondary is weakened with all the injuries and people being out. So I think it's a good matchup. And then he's coming off a career high in receiving yards against the Patriots. He had over 100 yards. He was Garoppolo's, you know, one of his main targets. So I expect the same thing for this week. And not only is he good receiving, but we've seen he's been a threat running the ball too, jet sweeps and stuff. So he's very versatile. And I think they just want to keep incorporating him into the offense and getting him more touches. So Brandon Ayuk's my first pick. My second stardom, Ronald Jones. Fournette came back last week. Actually, you know, he had, 50 yards on, I think, 11 attempts. So he did pretty good. He had more yards than Ronald Jones. Ronald Jones did have a touchdown. But Ronald Jones, the last couple weeks, had over 100 rushing yards, a couple touchdowns. So he's been a solid back for them. And he's going against Castle's Giants, who have been really good in kind of pass defense, but they have allowed the 9th most points to running backs in fantasy. So I see Brady and the Buccaneers kind of having some success against the Giants defense. Their offense has just been clicking on pretty much all cylinders. So I expect Ronald Jones to have a pretty solid game, especially if their pass game's a little off because it's Antonio Brown's first game. Chris Godwin's out. Mike Evans didn't really do good last week. So they might just try to run the ball. So I think Ronald Jones, even if he doesn't go off for, 30 points, I think he should have a solid at least 15-point game. And then my sit-ups. So Juju Smith-Schuster, he had a pretty good week last week, but he's right now questionable with a knee injury, I think. He didn't practice Wednesday. So even if he does play Sunday, he's not going to be 100%. And he's going against Baltimore's defense. And Baltimore's defense is solid. And their secondary is pretty good. He's probably going to be shadowed by Marlon Humphrey, who's one of the top corners in the league. Obviously, we know the trade they made last week for Yannick Ngakoue. So pass rush is going to be on Big Ben. And we said Big Ben's doing good, but he's not as mobile as he once was. So if he has time, he should do pretty good. But if he doesn't, then it's going to be tough for him to get the ball off. And I don't know. I just feel like who knows how Baltimore is going to be playing the Steelers, because are they going to give a lot of attention to Juju, or are they going to focus a lot of their attention on Chase Claypool? So it's definitely going to be interesting, but they're definitely going to respect Juju because of what he's done in this league. So I just don't see him having the best matchup. And then I think this is save the best for last. And my last sit-em is Le'Veon Bell. Revenge game for him against the New York Jets. However, I don't think he's going to get his revenge. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he didn't have a lot of rushing yards last week, but he did score a touchdown. But the week before, he had over 100 rushing yards. I think that was his best career game yet. And they still want, just because they signed Le'Veon doesn't mean that Le'Veon's now going to be their starting running back. I still believe that Clyde is their guy. They spent a first-round draft pick on him. They're barely paying Le'Veon. Le'Veon's just more like a luxurious piece to their team, while Clyde is not that Le'Veon's not valued, but what they had to do to get Clyde, spend a first-round draft pick, I think, is a lot more than just paying $1 million to Le'Veon. And I think Le'Veon, they're still trying to ease him in the offense slowly. So I think, and I feel like they're just going to want to try to attack the Jets secondary with Mahomes and just try to score as many points early and then run the ball. So I don't know. I just don't see Le'Veon. And I feel like the Jets defense is going to want to try to stop Le'Veon and not make him make a joke out of their defense. So yeah, so those are my stardoms and sit-ums. Hopefully those made some good picks like it did last week. Castle?
I like the picks on yours. Thank you. I like the picks on all accounts, Steve. Even the Ronald Jones pick. I mean, our run defense has just been struggling for years now. So I think he's going to have a big game. Very interested about that Juju pick. I did not know about him not practicing. So very interested to see what happens with that. Last but not least, it's time for my picks of the week. My first pick, I can't believe I'm picking an Eagles player, but we've been talking about the Eagles a lot. It's Carson Wentz, and here's why. They're going up against Dallas, another very crappy defense. Last week, he had 359 yards against the Giants, 2 touchdowns and an interception. So to me, that just shows if he can produce that against a weak defense, it's another interdivision matchup. I could see him having another explosive game against the Cowboys. Is he going to go off completely? I don't think so, but I definitely think he will get over 25 points this week. So definitely go with Carson Wentz. My other sit-em is Carolina running back Mike Davis. Christian McCaffrey was taken off the IR. However, he will not be playing tonight against Atlanta. We all know Atlanta's struggles on defense. Mike Davis is going to be coming off a tough week. He's going to want to go off this week, and I think he can really do it. So definitely go with him. And then guys to sit. First guy for my sit-em is Minnesota running back Adam Thielen. The Packers defense has impressed me a lot. This is something that me and Josh Rock were actually talking about. The fact that they shut out Tampa and that high power offense just shows me that it's going to be very easy for them to shut down the passing game for the Vikings, considering how streaky Kirk Cousins is. And something to keep in mind, Thielen obviously is one of the most targeted receivers on the team. You look at the stats when they played Green Bay. Mike Evans had 19 routes that game, was targeted once, and he didn't even catch it. So that, to me, shows that Thielen's going to be shut down very quickly. It's going to be a tough game for Kirk Cousins. And my other sit-em for the week, and this is tough for me because I have him on my team, but I don't have anyone good to replace him. I know it's not going to be a good week for him, is the Chargers tight end, Hunter Henry. He's only had 1 touchdown on the season. Justin Herbert is coming off an incredible game. I will give him that. But it's always tough for young quarterbacks to play on the road in Denver. Denver's just a different environment. So I definitely see him targeting Allen and Williams a lot more than Henry this week. They might even run the ball more this week. Who knows? But I just do not think Henry will put up the numbers that fantasy owners will want. So if you have Hunter Henry on your team and you have the availability to put in another tight end, do it. I'm going to suffer this week keeping him in. But we'll have to see. We have a lot of good games to come up this week. We all gave some good stardoms, good sit-ems. All you fantasy owners, definitely take account to that. And with that, that will conclude another episode of the 3P podcast. It's great for me to be back with these guys on the show. We're going to continue to pump out a couple more episodes. We got a lot of good content coming up with these NFL games. We got more college football info to talk about coming up for next week's show. Going to be college football heavy, so get ready for that. And with that being said, I'm your host this week, Alex Castle, and I had the pleasure of being joined by
Josh Framowitz
and Stephen Benazzo.
Continue to follow our Instagram at the 3P podcast. We're always pumping out content with the latest info in sports from around the world. We're always keeping you guys updated with our shows. So continue to look out for that. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week.